Finding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
With yesterday's Black Friday, today's Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday right around the corner, holiday shopping is now in full swing. On today's show, we'll continue our discussion from last week about retail business. Our first guest, Art Torelli, has two companies, one that delivers lunches from local restaurants by bicycle, and the other offers merchant accounts, particularly important for doing e-commerce. Our second guest, Betsy McFeely, is the communications director for Seattle Goodwill. We'll also hear about a University of Washington professor's new business that helps predict the price of electronics so shoppers know the right time to buy. Stay with us for this show that's all about retail here on Minding Your Business. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions we'll answer on the air. For those of you still living under a rock, yesterday was Black Friday. So what is the significance of the day? To some, it means bargain shopping. For retailers, it's a critical indicator. According to Thursday's New York Times and a certain Professor Oren Etzioni, Black Friday is the day when retailers' balance sheets go from red to black, but not the best day for consumers to land a bargain. The University of Washington professor is a renowned expert on data mining and the founder of Faircast, a web application that helps predict airline ticket prices. He later sold the app to Microsoft for $115 million. Now Etzioni is applying that data crunching capability to predicting prices on electronics for shoppers at Decide.com, which was just launched this past summer. Similar to how Faircast predicts the right time to buy an airplane ticket, a website visitor simply types in the name of a product. The Decide.com system will then pull prices from around the web and make a recommendation as to whether to buy or wait within a certain percentage of confidence. To determine the best time to buy, the company studies current and historical prices, information about new models, and rumors about new product introductions. The professor's research has also shown, for example, that it's not until early December that prices are likely to be the lowest for electronics. Etzioni says there are plans to expand to categories like cars and perhaps clothing in a couple of years. To learn more, visit Decide.com. Minding Your Business is all about retail on today's show. Do you have a Black Friday experience to share? Is your register ringing in the sales? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air. And in a moment, we'll be speaking with Arthur Torelli, who has his hands full running two companies, one that most businesses need, the other delivering something we all need every day. Our first guest is Art Torelli, who grew up just outside of Philadelphia and attended Wilmington University in Newcastle, Delaware. After moving to Seattle in 1993 and working as a bike messenger for 8 years, Torelli started Electronic Processing Consultants, or EPC. The company has provided merchant accounts for 10 years. Later, and building on his messenger experience, Art launched Food Peddlers. This service delivers lunches and dinners prepared by local restaurants to workplaces and residences by bicycle throughout downtown, South Lake Union, and Lower Queen Anne. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Art.
Hey, Robin.
Let's talk about EPC first. Can you tell our listeners what a merchant account is?
Merchant account. That is, it's a loan product, basically, that you would get from a bank or another lending type of institution that allows you to accept credit cards for payment. So the tagline I like to use is turning plastic into cash for your business.
And what kind of plastic is that exactly?
Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover. You can also have different forms of check acceptance, electronic check acceptance, or gift cards, things like that. Those are the types of services that EPC provides.
And what does it take to set up a merchant account? What's part of the process?
Well, there's a couple different ways to do it, and different companies have their own procedure for how you go through it, but you almost always will have to fill out an application where you're registering, you know, your name and address, and typically either a social security number or a business tax ID number, a federal tax ID number, because they need to keep track of where the money's going. Everybody wants to know who's getting paid, when, and where. the application needs to be tied to a checking account, so primarily a business checking account, but if you're a sole proprietor, you could also use a personal checking account. And the money will go there and the fees will be collected from there.
And is this something you can do online, or do you have to go meet with someone?
Oh, you could do it online, you know, and you can meet with people as well. Now, remember what I said in the beginning, a Visa MasterCard processing account is a loan product. So you're effectively getting a loan from a bank. So make sure that you know who you're getting it from and that that, in your mind, is a reputable organization.
And how do you determine whether a business is reputable? Like, what are some of the things you look for?
How do processors determine that a merchant is reputable, or how does a merchant determine that a processor is reputable?
Well, let's start with the first one. How does the processor determine that the merchant is going to be able to pay back the loan, essentially, or cover it?
How do we know that we're issuing accounts to responsible business people is a real question. And there's a couple of different ways they do that. So they're going to take your Social Security number on the application. Typically, they're going to run a credit check. A lot of processors will also want your home address and maybe your driver's license, so they can run a check on you as an individual and make sure that you're not on something called the match list, which is a Visa MasterCard list that indicates people who have run fraudulent accounts in the past or had problems with accounts in the past. People with incredibly bad credit are often declined merchant accounts. Then they also take documentation about your business, so they'll want to see a business license. Like, have you taken the time to actually open up a business with the state or city or county that you live in? So you'll get that business license, and you have a copy of that, so you'll know that they're registered and legitimate in that sense.
What should a merchant do if they're declined? I mean, are there alternatives?
There's alternatives, you know. So underwriting is different for a lot of companies, and it depends on why you were declined. Now, if you're declined because you're on the match list, you need to address that. The processor that put you on the match list put you on there for a reason. And, you know, they're probably going to want you to pay something in terms of fees or fines or back monies owed. And that's typically why somebody gets put on a match list. If you're declined for bad credit or for business type, shop around. Talk to other businesses in your industry. Find out what they're doing. There's probably an alternative for you out there. You know, maybe it's not the best price, or maybe it's not the company that you want to do business with, but there's probably an option for you that's going to work.
How do you know when a company isn't one you should work with? What are the danger signs?
How do I know when a merchant is the merchant I don't want to mess with?
Not from your point of view, but I'm wondering when that person is shopping around to different merchant accounts.
Oh, different merchant service providers. Well, it's one of those things. You have to get a feel for it. You know, how do you know when you're doing business with someone you don't like doing business with? There's not a specific thing. It's something that you feel as an individual, like, I don't like the way this guy talks to me. Or,
well, there are those personal things, yeah. But I'm kind of wondering, are there some rates that seem outrageous that you should be careful of, like usurious or...
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you'll see big rates. You know, if you start comparing, you'll notice a difference. And you'll notice a difference pretty quickly. You know, you'll see like PayPal post standard rates of, you know, 2.9% and 30 cents a transaction. And if you start shopping a lot of other merchant service providers, you'll see that their standard rates are, you know, maybe 2.2% and 20 cents a transaction. Where if you're getting a swiped transaction, it's even lower. It's well below 2%. So those are the kinds of things, like when you start shopping around, see what's out there. It's difficult to compare apples to apples a lot of times in merchant services because every company has their own way of structuring a price. So you have to apply each pricing structure to your business and make sure you know what's going on out there with the different prices.
And we're speaking with Art Torelli of EPC about credit card processing, merchant card processing. Have you started a business and looked for merchant account services? If you have, call us and tell us about it, and we'd love to hear your questions. So a little more about those rates that we're talking about. Can you tell me like some of the key categories?
There's two types of programs three types of programs that you'll see. One is a flat rate. The processor says it's 2.5% for everything. Now, that can be good or bad depending on your average ticket and whether you're swiping or keying in transactions, taking them over the internet. Anything that's swiped is the cheapest kind of transaction to do. The other things to look at is is it a cost plus transaction? A cost plus is where the processor passes through actual Visa MasterCard interchange and assessments, which is what we pay Visa and MasterCard for processing transactions, plus a predetermined profit margin. So then the question comes up, well, what is that profit margin? Are you billing me 1% and 30 cents over interchange and assessments, or is it more like a dime and, you know, a quarter percent? It kind of depends. You know, obviously one rate is better than the other. The other thing is a tiered rate. A tiered rate is going to have a qualified, a mid-qualified, and a non-qualified rate. That's the terminology that merchant account providers use. The mid-qualified and non-qualified are almost always the most important categories to look at, because every provider has a fairly decent qualified rate typically.
Can you define a little more what that qualified rate means?
A qualified rate is the lowest rate you'll receive. So you might see with a swiped account, they're advertising 1.59%, or they're advertising 1.29%. Or if it's a keyed-in account, it might be, 2.1 or 1.99%.
And just to clarify, the swiped is where you actually have the plastic card and you're running it through?
An electronic reader. So you're electronically swiping the mag stripe on a reader.
And a keyed
transaction is something where you're not doing that. So you're typing
numbers in.
You're literally typing numbers in, whether it's a consumer sitting at home on the computer typing in an internet transaction.
So the risk is lower when somebody actually has a card.
Yeah.
Because then you know that's the person connected with the card. There's some sense of security there.
Well, it's more about the purchasing decision. So when a card is swiped, it's assumed that the customer is at the business and they're reviewing the product or service and they're saying, yes, I want that. Here's my card. When it's getting keyed, you're looking at a picture on the internet and you're saying, yeah, I guess that's kind of what I want. It looks like my product. I'll buy it. But what happens on the internet is then somebody gets it, and they find out it's something else, or it's shipped broken, or they ship the wrong item. And then that's when chargebacks occur. And that's where you get into the risk of a Visa MasterCard, and also why certain merchants end up on the match list.
There are alternatives to getting a merchant account, like PayPal or Square.
Those are not alternatives. Those are merchant accounts.
They are. But can you tell me some of the key differences between those?
PayPal and Square have different forms of underwriting. PayPal was designed primarily for making transactions on eBay, and it's still really the best. If you're trying to buy and sell on eBay, you should have a PayPal account. You should be taking PayPal.
But also, if you have an e-commerce site and you really don't want to go through, let's say, all the trappings of setting up a merchant account, do you think PayPal is a good idea?
It can be. Depends.
Okay, we have more time to talk to Art in a little while. We'll be back after the break.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
Before the break, we were speaking with Art Torelli about his merchant account business called EPC. Now let's turn to your second business, Food Peddlers, the service that delivers meals the old-fashioned, new-fashioned way, by bicycle. So what prompted you to start a second business?
That had been something that I had been looking into for a while. And after being a bike messenger for a long time, I didn't really want to get separated completely from the industry. And I still really love riding my bike, although I do no deliveries myself for that business. It's something I always wanted to do. So I teamed up with some of my friends from Messenger Days, and we launched foodpeddlers.com.
And what are some of the challenges bike peddlers by food peddlers and the bicyclists face?
Well, Food Peddlers' biggest challenge is just getting the word out there. It's a pretty young company. It is a part of Small Business Saturday, so use your American Express card today and you can basically get, free lunch or dinner from Amex, unless you spend a bunch.
Do you have any other promotions going on beside the Amex promo?
We have a membership program, $28 a month, and you get unlimited deliveries, which is really nice. Typically it's a $7 delivery service charge. We're in the process of changing and redesigning our website as well to accommodate a group order function and just kind of get a better looking, more user-friendly website. And that should be out Tuesday. That's our That's the launch date for the second version of our website.
And so you actually took the time out today, even though you're launching a new website. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I know how much work that can be. So what do you mean by making it more user-friendly? What are you actually doing on the site?
Gosh, you know, it's tough for me to really answer that question. The upside of having business partners is that you're not responsible for everything. And I was responsible for finding the redesign and setting up the relationship with that web company, but not actually for implementing any of that. One of the things that I noticed with our old site is just sort of using the buttons, the button and the click, and then where the screen aligned after you went back to shop. So like, you know, you select a program and you say, you know, you select a product and you say continue shopping to add more things to your cart. I didn't really like how that worked. This should have a much more friendly shopping cart for the consumer to look at while they're ordering.
So you're going to make it simpler.
Yeah, yeah. That simplicity is gold when it comes to e-commerce and web. If it is too hard to figure out, or if you can't see what you really want to see, then people click away, and we noticed that was a problem for us.
So, in terms of how the business works, you have to hook up restaurants saying they want to supply certain meals, and then you go to pick them up by bicycle and then deliver them by bicycle?
Correct. Yeah. So there's a couple ends to it. So Food Peddlers has relationships with certain restaurants in town, and then they have consumers. And so the consumer gets on the website or calls us on the phone. You can call us on the phone if you want. And they get on the website, foodpeddlers.com, and they say, okay, you know, I want some Blue Moon burgers. I want, you know, 4 bacon cheeseburgers, 4 French fries.
You're making me hungry.
And we could book an order right now and have lunch sent to the studio.
That's a great idea.
So then we would contact Blue Moon and say, okay, well, we got an order for 4 cheeseburgers and 4 French fries. Say, okay, well, great, come pick it up. You know, it'll be ready in 10 minutes, and a guy would go there and pick it up and deliver it right to you. So average delivery time is actually super fast, like 20 minutes. And it's because we're not stacking food orders. You know, one rider goes and picks it up and delivers it. We're not taking stuff to Northgate either. Everything is close in. All the restaurants are in downtown. All the consumers that we deliver to are in the basic downtown area. And that way you can get stuff really fast and hot and fresh and no cars.
Do you find that to be enough of a service area to provide enough revenue for the business?
You know, it can be. And that's a part of the site redesign is what we're doing. And we're changing to right now it's kind of an individual, like, you know, you and your friend want lunch. And what we're doing is changing to an office catering thing. And as a part of that, we have some really big trailers and some small trailers and big food coolers so we can take much larger orders and deliver them around.
You've described those, I think, to me as those kind of kiddie ride things that go on the back of a bicycle.
So we have that. And then we also have like a gigantic 6-foot trailer that we could put, you know, a substantial amount
that
of food
one on. bicyclist has to tow.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like, boy, that's really hard, but I've ridden with it and it really isn't. You know, you would have to put something a lot heavier than food on it for it to be a problem.
This can be hot or cold. It's all like a container that keeps things at the right temperature.
Correct. So you have to put hot and hot and cold and cold. So like if you had sushi, for instance, you couldn't put that in there with a bunch of cheeseburgers.
Yeah, otherwise, that would kill it.
It would cook the fish.
Yeah. We're speaking with Art Torelli of Food Peddlers, foodpeddlers.com, how they're redesigning their website and how they deliver foods the old-fashioned way by bicycle. So about the bicyclists themselves, do they have to supply their own bicycle?
Yes. You have to supply your own bicycle. And that's something we can help out with. Like we have, like one of our partners is a partner in a bike shop as well. And we have different relationships where if you needed to buy a bicycle, we could help you get it. But basically it's your bike. You know, we're not going to supply you with a bike.
It's kind of like Domino's. You have to have your own car.
Kind of, you know, and that's very classic for most delivery. Like, you know, I delivered pizzas when I was in college and I had to drive my own car. It was no big deal.
Not your bicycle, though.
Not my bicycle, no. But a buddy of mine did borrow my bicycle to deliver in downtown Philly. He delivered like pizza.
It was
Domino's. It was Domino's by bicycle in downtown Philly when we were
Do they have to wear like uniforms or something, or what's the?
We're not that formal right now. We do have food peddlers T-shirts, but they're.
I want to get one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make sure you do. Right now in the wintertime, it ends up getting covered up with rain jackets and things like that. You know, we're hiring professional bike riders. Guys and girls that know how to handle a bicycle and know how to ride it the right way, so that it's not this wobbly person that doesn't really look like they're comfortable with cars around them or anything like that.
You don't want your lunch to crash and burn on its way to your office.
You definitely don't want your lunch to crash and burn on the way to the office. Of course, you wouldn't have to pay for it if it did. It wouldn't be your lunch anymore. But that's not the idea.
It might be somebody else's lunch.
Yeah, but it'd be the crow's lunch. Yeah. Whose lunch it'd be at that point. But
are you delivering a lot of dinners?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
really?
So there's two aspects to the business. One aspect is we also do delivery for restaurants. So say you had a restaurant that said, well, we'll do free delivery. They can either hire drivers to deliver it, or they can hire food peddlers to deliver it. And so we do a bunch of that kind of work, too.
How would a restaurant get on your list?
They could contact us, or we could contact them.
And what are you looking for in the types of restaurants? Does it matter, or do you have specific parameters you're looking for?
I'm going to say it doesn't matter, but really it does. What you want are good restaurants. The better the restaurant, the better it is to do delivery for.
So would it be fine dining or fast food or anywhere in between?
It's anywhere in between. And I mentioned Blue Moon Burgers. We deliver for Blue Moon Burgers, but we also deliver for Buckley's and Ohana. Which are nicer, more sit down type of restaurants, and so there's other restaurants like that we'll deliver for. So it kind of depends on what you're trying to serve, and we want something that's unique. We don't just want to deliver Subway sandwiches, although we would. We've got no real problem with that.
But then you'd have to contract maybe with the home office or something. Could you actually contract with just the local?
Could Subway's franchise. Pretty much the guy who owns it, controls a lot of that type of thing. Now, I don't know if Subway has rules about that, about hiring outside providers. But we would do it, but we want better restaurants and people who can provide. So if there's a problem, we don't want a restaurant that can't provide food for our customers.
We're speaking with Art Torelli, who owns and manages Food Peddlers, offering lunches and dinners delivered by bicycle in Seattle. Do restaurants have to pay a fee?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so they pay. Oh, that's interesting. So how does that work?
Typically, you get a percentage from the restaurant of the total order. So if you get an order for $100 worth of food, you'll get $25 out of that.
So you're getting revenue from both sides.
You need to, otherwise it doesn't work. And any type of food delivery company that you see out there has the same exact method. There's like a delivery service charge, and you get money from the restaurant. Otherwise, it's
standard, is what you're saying, for the industry.
Standard for the industry. Yeah, that's how it works.
So what are some of your challenges of? We have like a minute left. What are your challenges in trying to run two businesses at the same time?
EPC is something that I actively run and manage myself. The food peddlers is something that I help out on, and that's how I do it. If you're going to have multiple businesses, it's really hard for you to wear two hats simultaneously. So other people help me run food peddlers, and I help them, and that's how I do it.
You're listening to Minding Your Business at Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. It's all about retail on today's show. Coming up next, how e-commerce merchants can keep the excitement going even after the customer hits the buy button. Stay tuned. U.S. consumers are hitting their computers hard this holiday season, with nearly half saying they'll shop online, according to consulting firm Deloitte. It's no wonder that shoppers are flocking to websites when it's so easy to compare prices and avoid the whole mess at the mall. But retailers miss the opportunity to thrill the customer with merchandising and personal selling. So smart online sellers try to extend the shopping experience from the buy button all the way to that moment when the customer opens the box. According to Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal, the most extravagant splurge can disappoint if it arrives in a tiny plastic envelope or giant postal box. For stores offering a high level of service and design, the challenge is to reproduce a theatrical shopping experience in a cardboard carton. Neiman Marcus has 64 box sizes for shipping everything from champagne flutes to shoes. Small businesses generally can't afford to go all out with custom packages, so it's important to emphasize other elements like personality and personal service. Small businesses can take a page from Gregory Shields, Senior VP of Distribution, Logistics, and Fulfillment at Neiman Marcus. First, Shields recommends packing the items securely so they arrive in one piece. The shipping box should fit just right, big enough so presents don't press against the sides, but snug enough so nothing moves around. Wrap the item securely, then test your package with some rough treatment. Drop it, toss it, as if it were being shipped. Once you've got that squared away, you'll need to recreate that great experience, which will help boost your sales way beyond the holiday season. Include a handwritten note that makes a connection with the customer. If you're not sending out too many, try signing each by hand. Make the packaging serve triple duty, as cushioning, branding, and to add excitement. Use tissue paper and ribbon in your branding colors. And take the opportunity to brand other printed materials you place in the box, like forms, shipping confirmations, and more. Anthropology, which is part of Urban Outfitters, uses patterns from the season's bedding and quilts to dress up their envelopes. Carolyn Kerr, Anthropology's brand director of packaging, says, "When you get something in the mail, it should feel like a present, whether you bought it yourself or not. As for gift wrap, you could charge a flat rate, but if it's not too much trouble, consider offering it as a perk to your most loyal customers." Thanks to the Wall Street Journal for that information used in this story. Our next guest is Betsy McFeely, Communications Director for Seattle Goodwill. The organization was founded in 1923 by local business people who recognized the need for training and employment for those without job skills. In the early 30s, Goodwill moved to its current location at 1400 South Lane Street. At that time and during the Great Depression, Seattle Goodwill began trading work for goods. The organization has since expanded to educational and training programs for people with physical and mental disabilities, as well as those with economic, educational, social, and vocational challenges. In the 90s, Goodwill spent their time expanding programs and retail operations. Today, Goodwill operates 20 retail thrift stores and 9 job training and education centers throughout the Central and North Puget Sound. Originating from Boston, Betsy McFeely has been with Goodwill for 13 years in several positions in the PR communications department. Her professional focus has always been on the nonprofit sector, working in fundraising, program development, and volunteer management. Betsy also serves on the boards of the Rainier Chamber of Commerce and the South Park Neighborhood Association. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Betsy.
Thank you.
So how much does Goodwill depend on the proceeds from their retail operations to support other programs?
Right now, our retail stores are the major provider for the funds that we use to support our mission side, which is job training and education programs. We do have a development department that does traditional fundraising kinds of activities, events, mailings, that sort of thing. But the retail stores provide the major percentage of funding that goes to our mission side.
And is this pretty much the same percentage or the same way you've operated since before the recession?
I would say that so. I think the development department is relatively new. We've only had one for about 9 or 10 years. I think we realize, though, one aspect of having a development fundraising department is that it really helps you get out in the community and talk more about who you are and what you do and how that works. And we found that over the years, a lot of people, of course, have donated goods to us so that they're familiar with that part of the business. They've also been shoppers, which of course is great. Not everybody knows the mission side and how the organization works, that we take the goods that people donate to us to resell in the stores to raise proceeds to support the mission. So I think being out in the community through fundraising activities and that kind of thing is all great for the organization to increase our outreach efforts and get the word out.
And mostly in your retail store, how would you describe the products that you sell there?
Well, a good portion of the items that we sell are donated from the community. Some are gently used, some are brand new. We get items that have the tags on them.
We've had a discussion about the word vintage.
Yes.
Is that something you use?
We do have vintage clothing. We provide quite a few vintage items at our university district store. We also sell a small percentage of new goods to enhance the selection of goods that people can get in our stores, like socks and that sort of thing.
And where do you get those?
We buy those from retailers and folks that sell new goods in bulk. So we are always trying to enhance the selection so that when people come to Goodwill, they can really meet a lot of their shopping needs in one stop.
The people that work at Goodwill, are they mostly volunteers, or do you have paid positions there as well?
Most of the people that work at Goodwill are actually employees. We now employ about 1,600 employees at all of our 20 retail stores and 10 job training centers. So we have quite a large territory. We do use volunteers in some of our job training sites to help with development or fundraising events, that sort of thing as well. But most of the people that you see are paid employees.
It's funny when you drive up to the Goodwill parking lot and you see people working out there and sorting through all these massively miscellaneous products and everything. I often wonder I know what goes into the machine, so to speak, but how does all that stuff get processed?
It's really quite a task, I have to say, and I volunteered out of the donation centers myself during the holidays, and it's just amazing to see what people donate to us. We do a lot of sorting, so the sorting process starts at the donation center when they put the items into different categories into the truck, and then we do another sort when the items are unloaded at our different store donation centers. We do a lot of sorting, and then we have to price the goods that go out on the floor. Our goal is to get goods from the donation point to the retail store in 24 hours or so, which is pretty amazing considering. But we're constantly reprocessing goods and getting more goods out on the floor. People are always looking for new items. So we're constantly restocking the stores every day, all day.
So the customer experience is not just shopping, but there's a certain amount of fun involved with the discovery.
That's true. We find people come to Goodwill for a variety of reasons, one of which is what I think you're alluding to, which is the treasure hunter and that sense of you never know what you're going to find. And we often suggest to people that, you know, be flexible with what you're looking for because you may not find the exact item that you wanted to find, but during your search, you might find something else that you just absolutely love that's very unique. It's one of a kind. You didn't know you needed it, but then you saw it and you really do need it. And so to be flexible and open because there are just a myriad of items at
Goodwill. I can't wait to dig back in myself. We're speaking with Betsy McFeely, Communications Director at Goodwill, and all the retail good works they do down there. I'm curious as to how you set your prices. I mean, being that there's no cost to the goods that you get besides all the processing that you do, of course there's a cost to that. But how do you figure out what to charge for things?
That's a great question. There are certainly some operational expenses to running 20 thrift stores and 10 job training centers, from employing people at the donation centers, our transportation department, which transports all of the goods to the stores, and then all the people on site that process, price, and move the goods into the stores. We have our retail team does a lot of research at other thrift stores and other retailers. A lot of our retail staff have worked for major retailers before, so they really look around and see what items are being sold for in regular retail stores. They're really familiar with brands and vintage clothing and designer clothing and know what certain things might sell at retail, but really come to an assessment of how much that item can be sold for in a thrift store and what people are willing to pay.
Do they ever use eBay as a resource?
Absolutely. We actually have a Goodwill store on eBay. We have an e-commerce business and sell collectibles, leather goods, jewelry, artwork, that kind of thing on eBay as well. So I think it's just constantly researching and looking at what you're selling and looking at your figures to see what people are willing to pay. And we're constantly training our pricers as to what to price a good and sort of to assess the quality and look for certain things and how something is made or produced. So it's not an exact science, but we certainly work to get that more consistent.
Just briefly, in the couple of minutes we have left before we go to the break, I understand you have a special sale going on right now.
The toy sale?
Yeah,
yes.
Tell me about that.
We have a huge toy sale, which is just in time for the holidays at all of our retail stores except for our two outlet stores. Most of the toys, unless otherwise marked, are 99 cents. So it's a great place to go to get your holiday gifts and fill up the stockings for families and children. So if you're looking for something for friends or families, it's a great place to go.
Excellent. And what were the price of some of those toys?
99 cents. I know. Let me repeat that.
99 cents. Get them now.
Right.
We're speaking with Betsy McFeely of Seattle Goodwill, and it's a great time to shop at Goodwill. Once again, we'll be speaking more with Art Torelli of EPC and Food Peddlers and Betsy McFeely, Communications Director at Seattle Goodwill, after the break. You're listening to Minding Your Business at Money Radio 1300 KKOL. It's all about retail on today's show.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
We're back with Art Torelli of EPC and Food Peddlers and Betsy McFeely of Goodwill. She's the communication director over there, and we thought we'd have a little open discussion about the economy and what's happening with retail trends and how shoppers' behavior has changed due to the economy. Betsy, something we talked about on the last show was the fact that people have limited dollars to shop with this year. How do you think that's affecting Goodwill, and is it helping you or hurting you, or what's happening with that?
Well, I think that over the last few years, during the economic downturn, we've definitely seen more shoppers and new faces at our stores. So I think it's impacting who is shopping at thrift stores, and people are realizing that shopping thrift is really a very viable alternative to finding the things that you need and staying within your budget. We're just noticing that people are starting to spend a little bit more at the register, which is a good sign, maybe buying, treating themselves a little bit more to buy themselves something that they might not have a few years ago. So we're excited to see that encouraging sign.
And I've also heard the trend that people want that added value bump of being able to help people
right.
while they're shopping. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I think ultimately people come to Goodwill to shop because they like the prices, but I think they also feel good because they know that their purchase is helping someone get job training and education programs totally free of charge to help them get back in the job market. And a lot of people are out of work and needing training and skills, and Goodwill's a great place to get free job training. So it's kind of a win-win. You get a great item at great prices, stay within your budget, and you're helping other people as well.
And is there a role that maybe some small businesses out there could play in the relationship with Goodwill?
Well, we'd certainly love, I think partnership is key these days. So I think we'd love to partner with small businesses in ways that they can support Goodwill, or they might have goods that they want to donate or want to partner in some other type of way or do a donation drive. We're really open to lots of ideas, so we would encourage them to call us.
So that's great. A good team effort and everyone benefits.
Absolutely.
I love that win-win situation. That's great. So the economy has been kind of weird, Art. And have you seen an uptick in your business on either side or?
So, yeah, I actually get an interesting view of the overall Puget Sound economic situation because I've been doing this for over 10 years. So I actually see Visa, MasterCard numbers of all these businesses. So there's winners and there's losers. The big winners have been the online discount retailers.
Like?
So the one that I can think of off the top of my head, they sell ink and toner online.
Interesting.
And And they, you know, if you compare their prices to the big box stores, they're cheaper by, you know, a third or better on almost anything. And those guys have been going gangbusters since the economy started to tank.
So it isn't so much maybe the product itself, but just people looking to save that little bit of cash.
Consumers still need the same things they needed 10 years ago, but they need to find the best price now. They're like, hey, look, we can't just, you know, overspend for items. So they're looking for the bargain. And I can see how that would really help out the Goodwill. The big losers that I've seen are, you know, like luxury furniture, very expensive items that aren't really necessary. Those kind of people have been going down and going down, and they're trying to find new avenues for sales and trying to find different things to do, because it's hard to sell, you know, furniture items for 10 grand.
Although we have seen some uptick in luxury item sales, being that the stock market has gone up and so forth. Have you noticed maybe more people shopping with their American Express, for example?
You know, so the American Express card is an interesting one, because that comes up every time I talk to a new customer. You know, do you take American Express? Yes or no? Would you like to? Yes or no? And for me, I almost always recommend American Express, because the card holder, the American Express card holder, actually has more money. They're more money savvy, and they spend more.
Why do you think that's the case?
It's how American Express markets themselves. And Visa, MasterCard markets themselves to absolutely everybody. You know, so they have all these bank relationships, and they're giving out credit cards and debit cards to, you know, everybody. American Express markets themselves as more of an elite card. And then their points program is much older than the Visa MasterCard points program. So you've got these traditional card holders, and money begets money. So this rich guy has a rich son, and that's very common. You know, the poor guy has a poor son. Now, this is America, so anybody can change station with hard work and acumen.
And job training
from Goodwill. You know, all those things help out, but they teach that. So, you know, go get an American Express card, and then that's what they use. So you get bigger sales out of American Express typically.
We're speaking with Art Torelli and Betsy McFeely, who is from Goodwill. Art is from EPC, a merchant credit card processor, as well as Food Peddlers. And my name is Robin Block. You're listening to Mind Your Business, and we're just continuing with our discussion about retail in Seattle. Do you think Seattle is friendly towards small business and businesses trying to do what they need to do in Seattle, like the government of Seattle?
In general, yes, my opinion. But it's really weird. Like the state has a weird tax program. So the taxes become kind of hard for small businesses, but the consumer base is friendly.
Well, we're going to have to continue that discussion on next week's show and many others after, because I think that will take a lot of time that we have. So it looks like we're pretty much running out of time for today's show. You've been listening to Minding Your Business from KKOL in Seattle. I'd like to thank our guests, Art Torelli of EPC and Food Peddlers. You can learn more by visiting their websites at eproconsultants.com and foodpeddlers.com. And Betsy McFeely of Seattle Goodwill, be sure to stop by during their big toy sale and get toys for 99 cents. To learn more, visit seattlegoodwill.org. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block. Now get out there and shop local.
Listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.